Previously on Flying the Line, Frank Borman cedes Eastern Airlines to Frank Lorenzo.
This podcast is brought to you by the Airline Pilots Association. ALPA supports its pilots through a variety of resources, including member insurance. Choose from life, disability, dental, Medicare Advantage, identity theft, and more. Separate plans designed for Canadian members are available, including life, auto and home, and critical illness. Visit memberinsurance.alpa.org.
Welcome to the Flying the Line podcast, a look into the past of the Airline Pilots Association, a bridge from the book Flying the Line, Volume 2 by George E. Hopkins. Chapter 18, Lorenzo's Last Gamble, The Origins of the Eastern Strike, Part 3. Lorenzo's looting of Eastern began slowly. Throughout the remainder of 1986, things stayed relatively quiet as ALPA gave Lorenzo every chance to save the airline. But ALPA's good faith was in vain, for Lorenzo was merely biding his time, following his familiar strategy of dividing labor by targeting the IAM first. The truce would end when the machinists' contract came up for renewal in February 1987. The IAM refused Lorenzo's demands for wage cuts and instead asked for a raise. Lorenzo launched a publicity war, denouncing $45,000 per year baggage handlers. This time, ALPA wouldn't be taken in. A memo to all ALPA members contained the following statement. How do you think an employee will feel if you're 51 years old, you're a baggage handler, you've worked your way up to $30,000 a year, and they come in and say, I'm going to cut your salary to $18,000. If you don't like it, you're fired. Amazingly, the preceding statement wasn't from some IAM official. Rather, it was a direct quote from Robert Crandall, CEO of American Airlines, in a June 1987 interview. For the next 2 years, the hostility between Lorenzo and the IAM continued, as the contract talks underwent mediation. Although the pilot's contract wasn't open, Lorenzo nevertheless sought $114 million in additional concessions, simultaneously with his demands for givebacks from the IAM. When the pilots refused, Lorenzo followed yet another of his familiar strategies, suing to invalidate the contract Borman had signed during the takeover, the very contract Lorenzo had sworn to accept. February 1987 marked the beginnings of sustained conflict between Eastern's pilots and Lorenzo. Unlike the Texas and Continental pilots, Eastern's pilots vowed to be ready for Lorenzo. While they had extended their wholehearted cooperation during the 1986 truce, the pilots had also simultaneously prepared for a fight, should it come to that. Building upon the experience ALPA had gained in the United strike, Eastern's pilots instituted a family awareness program to build internal solidarity. Under the leadership of former executive administrator Jack Bavis, who became MEC chair in November 1986, Eastern's pilots prepared to launch preemptive strikes at Lorenzo to keep him off balance. Chief among the tactics employed was one aimed at organizing their Texas Air Corporation, or TAC, siblings to bring them all together under ALPA's umbrella. Reasoning that a formal program sponsored by ALPA National would meet resistance, Eastern's MEC began a pilot-to-pilot program they called TAC Unity, which encouraged Eastern pilots to individually seek out pilots they knew personally at Continental. However, this bridge-building program didn't work due to internal divisions within Continental itself. Nevertheless, TAC Unity worried Lorenzo. Operating with a grant of $2.5 million from ALPA's Major Contingency Fund, Eastern's pilots seemed to be making inroads among Lorenzo's disgruntled pilots, who chafed under substandard wages and poor working conditions. Lorenzo wasn't at all sure his Continental pilots wouldn't sign enough authorization to act cards to force a representational election by the National Mediation Board, so he countered by announcing a retirement plan and wage increases, which he had to do because Continental was losing pilots to other airlines. Lorenzo also struck back with a panicky letter to all Continental pilots in September 1987. Lorenzo warned that if ALPA were to win, the union would merge the Continental and Eastern seniority lists, sending many of the Continental pilots to the bottom of the seniority list, and many more would lose their positions, just as, he said, ALPA had always wanted. Lorenzo advised that when ALPA approached you, remember that they were willing to sacrifice you and your family. Proof that Lorenzo was seriously worried came in a series of personal meetings with his pilots at Continental domiciles, something he hadn't done since the strike. He promised that they would be only the first of regular quarterly meetings to build the Continental family. Lorenzo invariably began these meetings with pilots by telling a favorite horror story about ALPA. This one concerned an 8-year Western Airlines veteran who, after ALPA merged their pilots with Delta's, was placed on the seniority list below a Delta pilot who wasn't even out of training. Lorenzo's anecdote deserves explanation. As we have seen in earlier discussions of ALPA merger policy, if date of hire was to be the only method for integrating pilot seniority lists, it could lead to grave injustices. In the Western Delta merger of 1986, negotiators accepted a stovepipe standalone seniority list integration. Under this system, pilots were integrated according to the equipment they flew at a 10-to-1 ratio based on the size of the two pilot groups and structured so that no pilot at either airline would lose their domicile or be forced to change seats. The main deviation from date of hire arose because of the B767, which only Delta flew, so there was some distortion in favor of Delta pilots. Lorenzo's attack on ALPA merger policy for deviating from date of hire contains a supreme irony, for if Continental and Eastern ever were to be integrated as a single carrier, the method used in the Western Delta merger would protect the junior pilot group, namely Lorenzo's own scabs. So the celebrated horror story that Lorenzo used to warm up his pilot audiences was, in reality, a distortion. In fact, the case Lorenzo cited involved a pilot who had been on medical leave for 5 years before the merger. The company wanted relief on training costs, so anyone already in training was guaranteed a number. Therefore, one Western pilot on medical leave gave Lorenzo the basis for his cautionary tale. ALPA upped the ante by filing with the NMB for a single carrier petition that would have declared Eastern and Continental to be one airline. If the NMB supported it, the petition would result in a representational election for the combined airlines. Continental's pilot leaders tried to derail the single carrier petition by launching a campaign to revive racketeering charges against ALPA. Lorenzo had once filed a $510 million lawsuit alleging a racketeering conspiracy by ALPA, but had dropped it as part of the strike settlement in 1985. By late 1988, Eastern's pilots faced a more serious challenge, Lorenzo's cherry-picking of Eastern assets. This technique, also called upstreaming, saw Lorenzo loot Eastern by selling off such valuable properties as the shuttle service to New York real estate speculator Donald Trump. Lorenzo had warmed up by selling Eastern's computerized reservation system to TAC, in effect, himself, for a fraction of its actual value in 1987. The total of the transactions amounted to nearly $1 billion and would later be ruled illegal by David Shapiro, the examiner assigned to the case by the bankruptcy judge. Shapiro ruled that in 12 of 15 asset transfers, TAC, or Lorenzo, paid unfairly low prices to Eastern. In the case of the reservation system sale, Lorenzo had paid Eastern only $100 million and then charged Eastern $130 million to use it. Even worse, he later sold half the system for $250 million. Subsequent to Shapiro's finding, Lorenzo belatedly paid Eastern $280 million extra for it, although typically only $133 million was in cash. The rest was in junk bonds. By fall 1987, it was clear that Lorenzo had no intention of working cooperatively with ALPA. Working conditions deteriorated, with ALPA pilots insisting that supervisors were pressuring them to violate FAA regulations and fly unsafe aircraft. ALPA responded with the Max Safety campaign to call attention to Lorenzo's shortcuts. By holding Lorenzo accountable, Eastern's pilots were intervening on behalf of an unsuspecting public, thus fulfilling the primary responsibility of the airline piloting profession. Unfortunately, the FAA, exhibiting a Reagan-Bush-inspired lethargy, dismissed ALPA's safety complaints as just a labor dispute. Later, after Lorenzo had effectively destroyed the airline, the FAA would reverse itself and fine Eastern and several individual supervisors for falsifying maintenance records, just as the pilots had charged. In July 1990, Eastern and nine high-level managers were officially indicted for conspiring to falsify safety and maintenance records to avoid costly flight delays and cancellations. These criminal indictments, unprecedented in the history of commercial aviation, charged that mechanics had been ordered to falsify logbooks. Working at Eastern, an airline with no future, became so stressful and unsatisfactory that junior pilots began leaving for other jobs, which they could do at the time because the industry was prospering and pilot hiring was high. Lorenzo worsened pilot flight by announcing stringent new requirements for sick leave, and he instituted a new system, in apparent violation of FAA regulations, canceling a captain's authority to determine airworthiness. More than 600 senior pilots retired early in the 2 years after Lorenzo took over, leaving Eastern so short of flight deck crews that Lorenzo had to begin emergency hiring. He also accelerated his plan to shift Eastern's routes to non-union Continental, along with the aircraft to fly them, including several of the fuel-efficient Airbus A300s, for which Frank Borman had mortgaged Eastern's future. To many pilots, this transfer of routes and equipment was the last straw. A kind of despair set in, as Eastern's pilots concluded they must either get rid of Lorenzo or lose their careers. Increasingly, the pilots came to favor drastic, even radical action. Then, in March 1989, the long-stalled IAM contract talks, which had been in supermediation, finally broke down, and the NMB released the parties to engage in an economic contest or strike. Frank Lorenzo's plan was right on schedule, unfolding at Eastern precisely as it had at TXI in 1975 and at Continental in 1983. The only issue now at stake was the pilots. Would they cross the IAM's picket lines? There was so much bad blood between ALPA and Charlie Bryan, leader of the Eastern Machinists Union, that Lorenzo could reasonably hope they would. If Eastern's boss had been anyone but Frank Lorenzo, they probably would have. But Lorenzo had made Eastern's pilots desperate. Their goodwill had been met with cynical maneuvers, best illustrated in the following anecdote from Aaron Bernstein's book, Grounded. Shortly after Borman officially resigned, Joe Leonard, an executive sent over from TAC, called in Bob Shipner, a veteran Eastern pilot and 1978 ALPA presidential candidate, who was at the time the airline's vice president for flight, Leonard summarily fired Shipner and sent him back to the line. When Shipner asked why, Leonard remarked that Shipner didn't have the stomach to do what the carrier was going to do to the pilots. Little did Lorenzo know that this time, Alpa would be ready for him. Next time on Flying the Line, confronting an Eastern pilot strike, Lorenzo files for bankruptcy. Thank you for listening. This has been Chapter 18, Part 3 of Flying the Line 2 by George E. Hopkins, copyright 2000. We hope you have enjoyed this podcast. To listen and subscribe to more in this series, please check us out online at alpa.org or find us on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, this is the Flying the Line podcast, a look into the past of the Airline Pilots Association International. Production copyright ALPA 2024, all rights reserved.